Webster's Dictionary defines compliance as the action or fact of complying with a wish or command. This is The Compliance Guide.
The Compliance Guide.
As a healthcare provider or healthcare professional, navigating the muddy waters of compliance can get tricky.
And that's why we're here.
Helping you mitigate risk while increasing your profitability. This is The Compliance Guide. Now, here's your host, Sean Weiss.
All right. Hey, good morning, good afternoon, good evening to each and every single one of y'all tuning in, logging on, and hanging out with me and my very good friend Terry Fletcher. Today is Tuesday, the 26th of September. It's freaking amazing. We are literally at the end of another month, and we are going into what is actually my favorite month, which is October, because I am a freak for Halloween.
Well, it's my birthday month, so this is good.
Well, you know, last year for Christmas, I did the coffee of the month for you.
You did.
This year, for your birthday, I may have to send you one of my award-winning wines, but we're not going to talk about that right now. We'll save that for another day. I want to pick up, Terry, from a bit of a conversation that we started yesterday on the Monday Roundtable. And it has to do with physicians and their leadership not vetting consultants and vendors the way that they should be. Yeah. So let me pause, because I know you have a great story, and then I want to kind of pick up a little bit. And this will probably be about 15, 20 minute podcast today, because I think it's such a narrow topic and we can really hammer our point very quickly.
Well, the first thing that happened over the weekend is I noticed that the OIG posted something on Friday, and it says a medical information technology and coding consultant based in Ohio agreed to pay $30,000 to settle allegations that she assisted in causing the submission of false claims regarding neuromuscular stimulator devices. What caught my eye on this was the fact that it's a consultant. And so many people think, oh, the OIG, you can only get in trouble if you're a healthcare provider. And you and I both know that's incorrect. But what also caught my eye is the fact that, and I see this a lot, I have a lot of clients that they'll ask me a question. Can I do this? It's always, you know, the doctor down the street's doing it, or we were always told. How many times you and I heard that? We were always told. I'm like, by who? That we can do that, you know? And so you and I are like, who's telling you that? We need to get that person. But as a consultant myself, I'm so particular about being, you know, having integrity, making sure it's compliant, making sure that my clients aren't going to get in trouble. And that I prioritize integrity and compliance before anything. And the one thing that, you know, within ethical and legal boundaries, but I still want my, you know, obviously we want our clients to, you know, get the reimbursement they're entitled to, but we don't cut corners. We don't get around anything as people want to do that. And I just find it interesting that some providers and hospitals, physicians alike, are looking for yes men, are looking for people that agree with them versus people that are giving them correct information. And it's not just, you know, I know you've got some things here too, but I'm also finding that there are healthcare professionals like RNs, like nurse practitioners, that have maybe a PhD in a topic or a doctorate in a topic, and now they want to be referred to as doctors. And I'm sorry, but just the clinical term doctor means MD or DO. I mean, and I'm probably going to get cards and letters for this.
Well,
so I apologize.
PhD as well.
Yeah, exactly. But not in the sense that you should have it as Dr., you know, Susan, whoever, trying to tell a patient you're an MD if you're actually, you know, acting as a nurse, as a nurse practitioner. That's my point. You know, we have the president's wife right now who has a doctor in education. She has Dr. Jill on everything. And then he even refers to her as that. And several celebrities, when the last election, were like, oh, she should be attorney general. I'm like, for a doctor in education? They didn't check. They didn't check what her doctorate was in. And we're seeing that now in healthcare. And this is so dangerous, not to vet your consultants, not to vet your staff. And, you know, I'll throw it back to you on that.
Yeah. Let's kind of clarify this, right? Because I don't think we're trying to be demeaning, and I don't think we're trying to be dismissive of somebody who is a collegiate who.
Yeah, not at all.
Went forward and got a doctorate. But, you know, and look, somebody who gets a doctorate, a PhD, or, you know, whatever it is, if you want to refer to yourself as a doctor, that's fine. You have the parchment paper and it says PhD or whatever it is. But I think you have to be very cautious of how you promote yourself as a doctor. You know, because, for example, if you're on a flight and the flight attendant comes on and says, "Is there a doctor on board? We have a medical emergency." And you ring your call button and they come over and they say, "Are you a doctor?" And you go, "Yes, I am." And you go and look at the person who's in distress and you go, "Well, I'm a doctor of education." I mean, that's a problem.
Yeah, right? Talk about it's kind blowing of funny up your credibility.
It's kind of funny when you think about it. Like, right, so me, you know, I shared with you those letters, right, earlier this year. 2 days in a row, two flights in a row, back to back, I was on Delta Airlines and we had medical emergencies. One of them was an individual who was severely intoxicated to the point where she had also taken some anti-anxiety medication. It was either Valium or Xanax, and it created a respiratory suppression. And, you know, as a result, her blood pressure was extremely low. There were other things going on. And, you know, they pushed the call button. And I'm one of those people where I sit there and I'm like, yeah, I understand I have training and everything, but I'm one of those. And I'm like, somebody else, please stand up. Somebody else, please go to
me
the front
too.
Of there.
I used to be a nurse, but I'm not a practicing nurse anymore.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm sitting there and I'm like, all right, nobody's responding. And they're like, "Somebody, please, we desperately need help for this passenger." And I was like, "Oh, fine." So I go up to the front and first thing I do, obviously, is I, you know, shake the chest and try to stimulate the person and, you know, check them out a little bit. And long story short, she was just severely intoxicated because they served her 6 bottles of wine, which was absolutely ridiculous on the part of
the whole point attendants. Is you did not pass yourself off as a doctor.
But I did not, right? Because my training was as an EMT medic.
Right.
Okay. And anyways, so I get your point. I think it's extremely important that even if you have doctorate as your education, you've got to be very specific with it, right? Joe Biden is no more a physician than I am.
Or me.
Okay. Yep. So now let's go back to the vetting process because as you were talking about consultants, right? And I always am leery of telling somebody, like when I'm on an airplane, they're like, "What do you do?" I'm like, I'm always leery of saying, "Well, I'm a consultant."
Right.
Because so many consultants have given the industry such a bad reputation, right? So I'm very cautious, and I tell people that I've been in healthcare now for 30 years, and I've been on the regulatory compliance side. And that's really, you know, and they're like, "What does that mean?" And I'm like, "Well, I look at statutes, acts, laws," and they're like, "Oh, you're an attorney." And I'm like, "I'm not a bar certified attorney. That's not something that I ever wanted to do. I never wanted to be a litigator or anything like that." I go through it, right? And they look at me and their eyes start to gloss over and they're like, "Okay, yeah, I'm so sorry I asked you what you do."
I get the same question. Even my daughter, when she says, somebody will go, "What does your mom do?" She goes, "She's a podcaster." I'm like, "Thanks, Summer." I'm like, you don't know what I do.
Yeah, I now tell people I'm a winemaker. So anyways, so I was thinking about what you were talking about with consultants, right? And an organization came to mind. It's the NSCHBC, right? National Society of Certified Healthcare Business Consultants. Try saying that 5 times in a row fast. And now I'm not saying every single person that's a member of that society because I don't know them all, but I'm not saying every single member of that society is 100% perfect, right? But I can tell you the active members of that society, the president, the past presidents, the future president, the board of directors, the folks who are continuously engaged, these are individuals that stand for integrity. They stand for, you know, having a moral compass that points north, right? And for me, that's why it's such an honor to be a part of that society. I think that if you're going to hire a consultant, you should be looking for somebody that has some credentials as a certified healthcare business consultant. If you're looking at that person to help you and guide you through your business aspects, the same way that you look at somebody from a perspective of making sure that if I'm going to build a compliance program, I want somebody with a CHC, or I want somebody with a CMCO, or if I'm going to have somebody do my audits for me, I want somebody with a CPMA. Maybe I want somebody with clinical credentials, right? An RN, LPN, NPPA, MDDO, but they have to have requisite skills in the specialty for which I'm engaged. And this was a really interesting situation, Terry. So last week while I was traveling, which is, you know, why we didn't have our Monday roundtable and Tuesday, hashtag Terry Tuesday, I was in the process of negotiating a settlement with UHC. And I will tell you, I've always had very good outcomes with UHC. I know a lot of folks like to, you know, badmouth them. And there's some things UHC does that they deserve to get a thrashing, right? They deserve to get a mule kick. But this was a client of mine, excuse me, in Louisiana. And this was a Medicaid managed care plan. Well, they claim that they did a statistically valid random sample and they audited this neonatologist's claims. Now, this is a neonatologist in a medically underserved area of Louisiana, health professional shortage area, and it's a neonatologist. You want to talk about uber specialized. Well, they said that they had a nurse reviewer conduct the audits, and they determined that the services were not neonatology services, they were more critical care services. Long story short, they wanted $197,000 back. We negotiated a $20,000 settlement, okay? Client was extremely happy. UHC was extremely happy. But see, for me, when I talk about my ability to negotiate settlements, it's because of my experience. It's because of the relationships that I have built with people in the industry who recognize and trust that when I tell them a bona fide investigation has been done, a meaningful audit with individuals with the requisite skills in neonatology perform the review. I had a computational statistician look at the SVRS and the post-audit extrapolation to make a determination as to whether or not there were any fatal flaws and whether or not there was repeatability. Did they get the point estimate correct? Did they, you know, get the upper or lower bounds of a 90% or 95th percentile? My point is, you shouldn't be looking for yes people. You should be looking for individuals, and this is back to what you said before. You should be looking for individuals that possess the requisite skills in the area that you're seeking assistance, but who are going to push back on you as a physician or your physician leadership team when they know that you're skating too close to the line or your toe is dipping over that line.
Well, I think the thing also that I run into quite a bit is I clean up a lot of messes like you do, where I go into on the back end, somebody will say, can you help us? We had a consultant here that he said we could do this, that, and the other, and turns out we can't. We're getting a TPE audit or a CERT audit. Heaven forbid they get a UPIC audit. And now we have a problem because we have to send money back. Now they're going to be targeting our claims. Or they have a patient saying, you know, that reported it to their payer saying, why did you do that? Because I never did that. Or that's not something you can bill for. There was a consultant out there telling, oh my God, this really big healthcare entity that they could bill for posting general statements of lifestyle medicine in the patient portal and charge for it. And I'm like, who told you that? And they told me who the consultant was. And I'm like, okay, well, I need permission to go directly to that consultant because that's wrong. I said, you can only charge for individual messages that are back and forth. There's a rules on it. It's called e-visits. It's digital. It's only been open for payment for the last 3 years. And you know, I kind of went into the whole thing. I said, but general statements, it's like posting a banner and telling a patient you've got a $50 copay for opening up your portal and reading a banner. I'm like, you can't do that. Well, they never vetted the consultant, and the consultant not only let their credentials go, but also was someone that was on a watch list with Medicare, where they're like, don't listen to this person. You know, they actually put out a statement saying, we know that this person has said this and that and the other. And unfortunately, I knew who this person was. And I was just like, and you and I do not like to go against other consultants. It's just, it's no. Bad manners. You know, it's just, it's not a good thing for the industry. But in saying that, you and I are also known as some people, you know, as consultants with not only integrity and compliance, but skills, but we both have collectively been in the industry, you know, over 50 years, collectively people,
yes.
But, yeah. And so we have a reputation to uphold, and we never want to have guilt by association. And so we have to sometimes call out the consultants. Or the other problem is vendors. I mean, you and I have had issues with vendors that yeah. have come to providers with no coding skills, no reporting skills, no understanding, and this is probably in your wheelhouse, of you know what the OIG or what CMS or HHS even looks for when they look for that impropriety. And they're only out there to get business. They're there to get the doctor's business. They're there to say, guess what I can do for you? Look at how much, you know, you can get rich quick if you bill this. And then we have to come in on the back end because, again, they didn't vet the information or the person giving them information. And it's also really hard for the staff. You know, think about your staff or the listeners that are listening to this. You know, they're really trying. They're in their leadership groups or they're in their meetings, and they're having these conversations about and frustrations about these vendors that are being brought in, these outside people that have not been vetted. And trying to get buy-ins from the doctors, the administration, saying you can't do that is really tough when you're getting outside people saying, oh, yes, you can. So you need to vet not only your consultants, your vendors, your providers, make sure they have the credentials they say they have. And before you start wading into or dipping your feet into waters that could get you trouble in the long run, because what Sean and I have seen, and we've unfortunately had to clean up messes, you know, Sean on the legal side of it, me on not just compliance, but also on, you know, the money side of it, I've had the same issues. It's just, it's really unfortunate. And I think it could have been avoided. That's the thing. Yep. It could have been avoided.
So, you know, when you talk about vetting, right, you know, sometimes when you're dealing with vendors, it's hard to vet them if you're talking about, you know, traditionally calling around like you used to do in the old days and ask doctors, oh, do you know this? Da, 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 da. When I'm talking about vetting somebody, there's two aspects, right? So for my groups that I do regulatory and compliance work for, we have a process called a vendor validation, okay? And what that means is we collect all of their marketing materials. We collect anything and everything that they have published and put out as coding guidance for the providers to follow. And then myself and or members of my team go out, we scour we don't just go to Google, right? We scour the MAC websites. We scour the commercial payer websites looking for medical coverage policies. We look for LCDs, NCDs, LCAs to try to either confirm or refute the information that they're providing our clients. So that's the first part of it. The second part of it is we actually go and we do an exclusion screen of not only the organization, but the actual individual who is acting as a sales rep for a distributor. And we look at the LEIE, we look at the SAM, we look at the other databases to make sure that these are not excluded or sanctioned individuals. So those, the exclusion screening is actually a very fast process because it's automated. And, you know, we look at that. But what takes a little bit of time is the vetting of the information that they're putting out there. And we do this to protect our clients, because sometimes our clients need protecting from themselves, from using poor judgment, or they have an individual in the organization that has a mentality of, well, I'm entitled to a better or higher reimbursement rate because look at the fact that they're dropping the RVUs again in 2024, or the conversion factor's going down, or, you know, my contract says I'm supposed to be paid at X dollars and I'm only getting Y. Well, there are answers to those problems. And it starts with, why were you not running your monthly reports to look at what you were being paid versus what your contracts were? And shame on you for waiting 2 years later to recognize that you had lost all this money when you could have been proactive staying on top of this. So anyways, bottom line comes down to this for me. I don't care who you're going to use. You've got to check references. And don't just call and be like, hey, Sean Weiss told me to give you a call. You know, what do you, you know, was he a nice guy? You know, did he do a good job for you? You need to ask the real questions, right? If you had a situation that required an expert in the areas that Sean Weiss worked, would you or would you not hire him again? And if you wouldn't, why? Those are the tough questions, right? Mm-hmm. Like when somebody comes for a job to our company and, you know, I've not been asked to interview folks for a little while because I'm tough. And, you know, I will call their references and I will say, hey, I know you're a reference for this individual, but they worked for you. Are they eligible for rehire? And that's what I always ask. And I always can tell based on how long the pause is, or if I have to go, hello, are you still there?
And that's the only thing you can actually ask here in California. You can't ask certain reference questions. You can only say, would you rehire them? That's the only thing you can ask. And that says a lot. But just to leave on the last note, one of the things that came out in another OIG post, I think it was last year, we may have talked about it, may have not. You mentioned something which triggered my memory on this. So a lot of people said they lost a lot of money during COVID. And that was why telehealth got expanded so much to cover some of those costs so the physicians can still, you know, see patients and if they couldn't come in. Well, there was a management group, and a lot of, you know, practices have engaged in management groups. And they said, well, what you should do is you should call patients twice a month. So you can charge for it as a telephone call. So you can make up the difference in your losses. Sean, I swear, I was like, wait, what? I almost fell off my seat. I'm like, that's not medically necessary. They're telling them basically to just increase a volume on something that was not patient initiated, that was not necessary, that was not stemming from any kind of complaint or anything. It was just, you can do this because we can push it through for payment. And what was the payback on that? I think not only did that company get called out within a year of telling all these clients to do it, and there was like 300 clients that were part of this management company. I think it was almost like $10 million. It was ridiculous. And now those people that follow that advice, because they didn't vet the information, not just didn't vet the company, but vet the information, they now are under 100% audit for certain things because they messed up. So we're trying to give you and to be proactive, you know, make sure that you do vet before you enter, because, you know, it's like, I don't know, like being an FBI agent, don't enter until you got backup, till you understand what's inside that room. You know, to enter it, doesn't matter how much, you know, you have a life vest on or, You know, you've got your own, you know, protection, but you don't have it if you don't know what's in there. And so, you know, what are you protecting against? And you need to know, because nowadays it's not if you get an audit, it's when. So
that's right.
That's what I'll just kind of end my part on that.
All right. I think this was a fantastic conversation. I know I went a little bit off the rails talking about my Delta flights, but I think it kind of all wrapped together in the stay in your lane conversation. All right. That's going to do it for Terry and myself this week. I know I didn't get a chance to say it, but congratulations on your Pittsburgh Steelers from the football game. I know that was a good win. My Miami Dolphins are now 3-0. I don't want to talk about it because I don't want to jinx them. I know a loss is coming probably either at Kansas City or at Buffalo, but, you know, they're off
to a great
start. You
don't want to jinx after scoring 70 points against Denver?
I know, that was so sad.
Oh, my God. It was embarrassing. But, yeah, no, we both won yesterday. It was a good thing.
It was a good day. All right. And I would like to wish all of you a good rest of the day. All right. So as always, that's going to bring us to the end of this podcast. Thank you all so much for tuning in, logging on, and hanging out with Terry and I just for a little while. We will be back next week, and we will already be into the new month of October. So frightening. All right. Until then, remember, be good to yourself, but more importantly, y'all be good to each other. Take care.
You've been listening to The Compliance Guy. Sean has been doing this for 28 years. He holds 10 national board certifications. He's a partner and the vice president of compliance for Doctors Management, LLC. He's a subject matter expert in federal court. He's lectured at the most prestigious institutions. He's engaged with members of Congress in both chambers. So what we're saying is he's qualified? We hope you've enjoyed the show. Make sure to like, rate, and review. And we'll be back soon. But in the meantime, you can find us on social media @The Compliance Guy. See you next time on The Compliance Guy.